Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast, a podcast that never shrinks, no matter what temperature you wash it in. I'm your host, Pete Pollock, and this week on the show, The Godfather, Part 2. Or we could say Part 2. As far as I know, the only sequel ever to win Best Picture. So it's got that going for it. It's an interesting little film, and we're going to hear more about it right now. I say it's an interesting little film, but it's really not a little film. In fact, it's almost two films in one. It covers two separate time periods in the Corleone family history. If you remember a couple weeks ago, if you did your homework, we covered Godfather Part 1, although it's not really called Part 1, except in relation to Part 2, because it's always there's a little bit of hubris in naming a movie Part 1 of anything, unless you're Mel Brooks or, somebody with that kind of cachet. So Part 2 picks up with Michael Corleone having stepped into his dad's shoes and having become the scumbag we all knew that he could. Taking over the crime family, moving the operations to Las Vegas, keeping their fingers in other things all across the country, and even into Cuba. And simultaneous with that, almost simultaneous, they actually go back and forth. We don't do a split screen, because that would be silly. We get to see the story of young Vito Corleone, starting at about age 10 and working his way up through his early years as he becomes the godfather that we all knew he could be, and in fact was, in the first film. This all makes for it's an interesting way of going about it, but the two plots really don't sync in the way that maybe you'd think that they should in order to do a movie that way. It's almost like the writers said, I'd really like to do a prequel, and I'd really like to do a sequel. And they couldn't make up their mind, so they just put them both in the same film. And that's fine. But they don't really tie together. There's a few cute scenes where one fades into the other, where something happens, and then you see something, I don't want to say similar, but something in the same vein happening 40 years or whatever before. But for the most part, the two plots really don't parallel or tie in with each other. It's just we got two different things we wanted to do, and we're just stuffing them both in the same movie. The biggest difference. Oh, I want to go back and just mention something, because I said this was the only sequel that won an Academy Award for Best Picture. And I know that somebody's going to call me on this and they're going to say, Return of the King. Hello. That wasn't a sequel. I'm not counting that as a sequel. That is that was part of a three-film set that was all done at the same time, all conceived of as a piece. And it was really only broken into three films because it's a lot easier to get people to sit through three separate films than one 11.5-hour film or whatever, however long it would be. So don't give me any stuff about that. Anyway, back to the plot of The Godfather Part 2. The thing that this one is missing, in my opinion, compared to Part 1, if we can call it that, is Part 1, and this is something I wanted to mention last time, and I kind of forgot when I was going over and doing the review. Part 1 is very lyrical. It's very poetic. And really, there's a lot of scenes in Part 1 that if you're going to film school, they're going to probably want you to see. The way the camera work is set up, it's just it's very moving and poetic, and there's a lot of depth in the images, and there's some great camera angles and camera work and whatnot. Part 2 is pretty good, but I don't think it really reaches the level of Part 1 as far as that's concerned. Now, when you get into the course of the plot, it really, by virtue of the fact that you've got two different things that they're juggling, and they're not juggling them, they're not 50-50. The current, the later timeline probably gets I'm going to say 75% of the screen time, 25% devoted to the young Vito Corleone, and which is not played, thankfully, by Marlon Brando. Nothing wrong with him. It's just he would have looked pretty ridiculous playing a 20-year-old. It's actually taken over by Robert De Niro, who's always pretty much a great actor, and you can always count on him to deliver a good performance. But I digress. The two films, when you have them jumping back and forth, they both tend to meander a little bit. The earlier timeline meanders a little less, I would say. You do get to see the stages, and it's almost a little, for my money, a little trite, because you see things that later on become pivotal things, or, you know, become very important in The Godfather Part 1. So you see him saying, like, I'm going to make a guy an offer he can't refuse. And of course, that's a big catchphrase in The Godfather. Well, we get to see the first time he uses it. You know, little things like that. It's like, yeah, okay, that's cute, but we really didn't need to see that. It just, to me, it kind of cheapens it when you work in too many references like that. As far as the second, the later plot line, the better part of the movie, it's kind of a convoluted combination of things with people trying to stab each other in the back. There's an attempt on the new Don Corleone's life, Michael Corleone's life, and he gets shot at in his house, and he goes on a little bit of a revenge kick, and it all works its way up to, you guessed it, a death montage, similar to the death montage in the first movie, where he gets rid of a whole bunch of his enemies all in about 5 minutes of screen time, and you can see it coming, and you know that all these people who have annoyed him through the movie, even if he may have looked like he forgave them, you know that they're all going to get taken out at the end. So that kind of picks up a little bit. That's a little bit of the future trite, if we want to call it that. We've got the past trite, where you know we get to see his catchphrases and whatnot working in, and then we've got the future trite, where every Godfather movie, at least so far, the ones that won Best Picture, have to have a death montage about 10 minutes before the movie ends. The other thing that the original, and I insist on comparing them because I think that's only fair, the original has, it's not really a plot twist ending, but it's an ironic ending. You can see it coming, you know where it's going to go, but it's powerful and ironic because of the way it's set up. This one doesn't really have anything like that. It kind of pushes in that direction a little bit, but it doesn't really have the same kind of effect that I believe the first movie does. There is a nice scene at the end where you get to see a number of the characters from the first movie in a flashback, so they actually jump to almost around the timeline of the first movie for one of the flashback scenes, and you get to see the James Caan character, and you know they're all young, and they're kind of it's right before right around the time that Michael decided to join the army, so it's a few years before the first movie. But you get to see all the characters in there except for Don Corleone. Marlon Brando did not show up for that, but you get to see some of the other people, and it's kind of a nice. I don't know if I'd call it sweet, given the circumstances, but it is a little bit of a touching scene to reach back and see some of the people from the first movie kind of acting like they did in the first movie. Overall, I gotta say, having heard how legendary this was, and you know, maybe one of the greatest sequels of all time, I'm gonna kind of disagree a little bit. It's not a bad sequel. And the problem with sequels in general, if I may pontificate, is that they all, in general, you have the first movie that you make, you have a story arc and you have things that happen to the characters and you put them in a position, you put them where you want to be by the end of the film. They all end up somewhere. And then when you go into a sequel, you don't really have anywhere for them to go. And this movie, I think, suffers from a little bit of that. Like, okay, now that you've had the big, powerful, moving story arc where you made the characters change, now what do you do with them? And I think that applies here. So I was a little disappointed with it. It's not, like I say, it's not a bad film, and it is worth seeing, but it does not reach the level, in my opinion, of the original. So this baby is a rent it, not a buy it, unlike the first film. But, you know, let's face it, if you buy one, you're probably going to buy the other because they look better sitting on the shelf next to each other. That's just human nature. That's my human nature, but I haven't bought it yet. But it's a rent it, so go out and rent it, but don't do it until you after you've seen the first one. Next week on the show... I got it. I went too loud again. I am really failing my production course here. But I'm not being graded. Next week on the show is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's a little bit of Jack Nicholson for you. And you can't go wrong with Jack, right? Well, I'll let you know next week. Got to keep you coming back for more. Can't give the review ahead of time. This is Pete Pollack. This is also the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast. And you can reach me every week at bignoisybug.com. Check out our past podcasts. Lots of movie reviews now. I've been doing this for almost a year. And the Chico Walker Show, our comedy podcast. Until then, see you all very soon.